Good morning. I think it's still morning. Yes, it is. Go ahead and be seated. Welcome. All right, our last case on calendar this morning is docket number 67931, Southern Nevada Adult Mental Health Services versus District Court. And Ms. Anderson, are you ready?
Yes, Your Honor, I ask to reserve any time I have left over.
Let's see.
Start with 5 minutes.
That's fine. If you'd like 5 minutes, that's fine.
May it please the Court, I'm Linda Anderson, appearing on behalf of two positions in the hospital administrator of the State Psychiatric Hospital. As stated in our pleadings, this case began as a federal class action. That case is still currently pending before the Ninth Circuit. These same claims were lodged in that complaint. Counsel and I had the same sort of arguments about whether you needed an affidavit prior to filing these sorts of negligence claims. When the case got dismissed at federal court, the case was filed here in state court, again without that affidavit.
Can I ask you a question, Ms. Anderson, just on the timeline? I was trying to go through these dates here. The Judge Adair did allow the amended complaint, even though the initial complaint didn't have the affidavit. Was the amended complaint filed within the statute of limitations, in your opinion?
It was filed the day before the statute of limitations.
The amended complaint.
The amended complaint was.
Okay. And that did have the affidavit, is that correct?
That had the affidavit.
Okay, so the action was, so if they had filed a brand new complaint and the day before and attached the affidavit, it would be within the statute and wouldn't be barred, is that correct? So it's only a question of whether you can amend it within the statute of limitations.
Exactly, Justice Gibbon. This is what looks like a very technical argument with some pretty drastic consequences.
Right.
The position the state is taking, though, is that this court, since 2006, in the Washoe Medical Center, even though there was a dissent at the time, had said that when you file this complaint without an affidavit, it is void and it cannot be amended. So that was the status of the law as we saw it. And I do understand that it's a very technical argument. This court has already explored all the reasons for that, the issues about how we gave up a screening panel and that the expert. What is clear in this case is that an expert had not reviewed this, although there had been ample time to do so. Discovery had begun in the federal case. That affidavit could have been considered. Interestingly enough, even when they went to the expert, which you will see in their affidavit, that expert didn't look at all the medical records. They looked at the original complaint and said, yes, this is a medical malpractice complaint. Where this issue got hazy is because, in our belief, is that the plaintiff tried to circumvent the affidavit requirement by labeling this not as a medical malpractice case, but as professional negligence, as other types of negligence. So it got around that argument that they said that they needed an affidavit. It's our position that under the clear rule, NRS 41A.071, the court should have dismissed, allowed counsel to go and file a new complaint with an affidavit, and that was the status of the law at the time.
So is it your position that none of the claims in the original complaint could stand or survive without an affidavit?
It's an interesting issue that we may not need to reach in this totality.
Well, but it makes a difference perhaps to your legal argument, which is that the absence of an affidavit required the initiation of an entirely new suit, and under Washoe Med, no amendment is possible because the complaint's void ab initio. Well, what about a complaint that has mixed claims, some subject to affidavit and some not? I'm not sure Washoe Med addressed that situation. So what is your position, again, with respect to the original complaint in this case? Were all of those claims asserted in that complaint required ones that required a medical an affidavit under 41A.071?
And that is our position. All of those claims
okay.
did. So if we had a mix, and it's a little bit confusing because there are some other defendants, Mike Weldon, Richard Whitley, who are named in the caption, described as parties in the complaint, but none of the claims were brought against them. So to answer your question, if there had been some other claims, later on when they amended it, they added the conspiracy claim with those two. But that one was not in the original complaint. So that got amended with the void complaint. Everything that was in the initial complaint we submit falls under the definition.
Let's say we don't agree with you and that you've got a mix. And some of those are require affidavit, others don't. Is it your position that what should happen? The action itself can't be dismissed in its entirety. It's not altogether void because there are legitimate claims that were included that didn't require an affidavit. So what should we do in that situation?
So the district court could have made that ruling. In other words, made the decision to say, okay, this part of the complaint is void, so you can't amend it, it's dismissed. I guess the way I'm struggling with that is it's in the interest of judicial economy for the complaint to be all tried together. You wouldn't
it
really
is. I mean, you're saying you got to go file another complaint and get some more money and pay another filing fee and then move to consolidate the two, right? I mean, is that what you're...
That would be one, if they divided them up. However, the clearer rule that this court had put forth in the past is that it's a void complaint. And if you go with that simple rule, then it would all come out and they...
Even the good claims that
even
don't
the good
require.
Claims, because you are basically saying it's a void complaint. However, it's our position that we don't reach that issue in this particular circumstances because all of the claims were on negligence based on the care given by the physicians and the hospital administrator. There weren't any additional claims that were outside the realm of the definition of medical malpractice.
Well, let's go back to the issue on as to, I just lost my train of thought.
It's getting closer to lunch.
Breach
all
of fiduciary, let's see, was it breach of fiduciary duty? I think there was a claim there that didn't fit into, or was argued didn't fit into medical malpractice, which was Brown's breach of fiduciary duty claims.
In their opposition, they moved away from the professional negligence and said, the fiduciary claim, it's an intentional tort, it should fall out. If you look at that fiduciary duty claim, though, it's unlike the case that you saw in Jones versus Wilkin where you had some duty. It's still a fiduciary duty as a physician to the patient relating to the treatment and care that was received. So you can call it a fiduciary duty, but it really still falls under, did they get proper care? Did they provide a reasonable level of care as a physician to the patient? So that fiduciary duty, while they try to characterize it as something different, I would submit to you would fall standardly under medical malpractice in the way that this court has looked at medical malpractice all the way to Hoops versus Hammergren, where if it's related to that client-patient, the physician relationship, that fiduciary duty shouldn't become somehow a different type of action that falls outside of medical malpractice.
But Ms. Anderson, would it have been okay for the motion to dismiss to be granted in its entirety, the complaint to be refiled with an affidavit and separate claims perhaps not sounding in medical malpractice, they would have had that remedy. Is that correct?
That is our position. I mean, that's exactly what I said to counsel, is we were moving the hearing closer to the statute of limitations running. I said, why are we going forward with this? Why aren't you just dismissing and filing a new complaint with an affidavit? I mean, I guess the argument I make is that this isn't everybody running to the courthouse trying to take care of business. This was a long time in coming, and the plaintiff had it within their source to remedy the situation very easily and selected not to do so. And this court has ruled in the past that when you fail to do that, you've granted a writ to, and we're asking for the same sort of remedy that you would provide to our private counterparts that you do to the state in terms of when this complaint is filed without an expert reviewing it in advance, which is what happened here. That affidavit clearly wasn't done prior to the filing of the state complaint, which was in August.
Do you think that there's a problem with the breadth of the language in WashOMED? The text of the statute requires that if an action is filed without the affidavit, the district court shall dismiss the action without prejudice. It happens all the time that there will be a complaint that's dismissed without prejudice, and then a party files an amended complaint that cures the omissions in the original complaint. Now, I recognize this would be quite different from the thinking in Washoe-Med versus Smith, but under the statute's text itself, would that not be a supportable result to allow the amendment rather than if you don't have a relation back problem? In other words, you don't have a statute of limitations problem because the amendment was filed within the statute of limitations period. So I wonder whether we should revisit that.
And I think Justice Douglas explored this all very well back in 2006 in the dissent. The problem I have, though, is that for the last 10 years, a different rule has been set forth by this court.
Yeah.
And that's the understanding that we worked under when we, you know, in filing this writ and in taking this court's time, is that was the rule.
So you had to start a decisis argument in your view.
That's my position. So I guess I will reserve the rest of my time. And
okay. Thank you.
Good morning. Still morning for a few minutes. Good morning. Alan Lichtenstein for plaintiffs, and I also have Mark Marin, co-counsel, with me. Just really like to clarify some of the factual things in this case. Because some of you probably think, why did you not just go file a medical malpractice claim with the affidavit? And our position was that this really wasn't under medical malpractice. It had nothing to do with treatment. This case is about patient dumping. This case is upon discharge. After the patient's discharged, not really competent, being put in a cab, given bus tickets, cab goes down to the Greyhound station. Mr. Brown took the bus because he thought he was supposed to. He thought he had to. He was not exactly competent then. Ends up in Sacramento with the instruction, call 911. Is that question of treatment, or is that something beyond that?
But now, you don't debate that you make a claim in your complaint that sounds or is set forth under NRS 41A. I'm looking at it.
Was that the original complaint or the amended? Is it where we amended the complaint to add a medical malpractice, specific medical malpractice?
I'm looking at a complaint that was filed August 25th, 2014, class action complaint, blah, blah. To me, like the original.
In any case, Judge Adair said you need an affidavit. This professional negligence falls under medical malpractice. It wasn't a written order. It was a direction from the board. We did so immediately. The case was not just about Ross O'Neill. The case was about state policy, and we named various state officials. If you look at the class allegations and claims, what they did and who they are mentioned. So the issue of, well, you didn't properly name these people in your original complaint, that was never ruled upon. That was never brought up, really. At the district court, that really arose in the reply brief here, and we've never had a chance to address that. I would say if that is the salient issue, it should be remanded back for a full record in terms of the district court. But that was not the district court ruling. The district court ruling was, and it wasn't even an order because we had amended the complaint before an order on the original complaint ever came down. It was a suggestion from the bench that, in an abundance of caution, since I, being the judge, believe that this falls under medical malpractice, get an affidavit. We did. If the judge had said to us, no, you have to file an entirely new complaint, we would have done so.
Is that on the judge to do, or is that on counsel for the party? I mean, that's a hard...
Well, it's hard, I would say, if the judge says, here's the direction I want you to take, to say, no, Judge, I'm not going to do it. It puts us in a rather difficult kind of position. We relied on what Judge Adair told us to do.
Do you think under Washamed that complaint was amendable to add the affidavit?
I think it was. And again, I think it was because of the other parties who are certainly not subject to medical malpractice, the state officials and the policymakers. And so, in a sense, I believe this is kind of an area of first impression. But I don't think the Washoe case really dealt with that particular question. The particular question that I think is really before this court is if a medical malpractice claim, along with other claims that don't relate to either medical malpractice or to people who are subject to medical malpractice, if the medical malpractice claim has to be thrown out, does that mean the entire case has to be thrown out? I don't think the Washoe case or any other case in Nevada addresses that.
Well, what, in your opinion, what aspect of this case shouldn't be thrown out?
I don't think any of it should be thrown out.
Well, you're going back to the position that this is not a medical malpractice case.
I don't believe that. I will accept that that there are medical malpractice claims and the claims for professional negligence fall under medical malpractice.
Okay, so assume for the sake of argument that we see a portion of this as a medical malpractice claim that requires an affidavit to be filed with it, and if it wasn't filed consistent with our precedent, it's void from the very initiation.
Well,
that leaves you other claims that you say don't fall into medical malpractice. Which ones are those?
Those are the ones for breach of fiduciary duty and all the common claims in terms of policy.
Intentional tort claims. But in your breach of fiduciary duty claims, I think under your fifth claim, your fifth cause of action, you indicate in their care and treatment is where they owed this duty and they breached this duty in their care and treatment. Well, that sparks, in my mind, thoughts of medical malpractice.
But not the state officials who created the policy of patient dumping because they're not subject to medical malpractice. And to go back to the original question that you asked, there's no question that there is a medical malpractice claim, and I might not have agreed with it, but the judge ruled that it was medical malpractice that was void, but didn't mean the whole case was void. So the judge never ruled that the whole case
was void. So your argument, counsel, is that at least with respect to Dr. Raven and Dr. Gupta, maybe as to those two physicians, the complaint is void.
The original complaint you're talking about? Yes.
So as to the other actors, state actors, it's not void because they don't involve medical malpractice claims. They aren't even doctors.
Correct. And our position was...
So would we be consistent with stare decisis if we conclude that under Washoe Med, the complaint, the portion of the complaint dealing with the physicians is void ab initio, but the portion of the complaint that asserts non-physician-related or professional malpractice-related claims is perfectly valid?
Correct.
And so my question is this. What in the original complaint were you asserting were the violations that were committed by Mr. Wilden, Mr. Whitley, and the institution that were...
Policy of...
Of patient dumping.
Patient dumping.
Which your view would be, at least in the complaint, that's not a medical malpractice question. You're just adopting a policy to patient dump.
Which we believe is illegal.
Mm-hmm.
And to further go on, in that belief that a medical malpractice claim or a professional negligence claim that sort of sounds like medical malpractice requires the affidavit, we filed a new complaint, an amended complaint,
right,
with that affidavit. So the only real question, and it was sort of brought up earlier when Ms. Anderson was here, is does the filing of an amended complaint in this particular fashion require, is that void in and of itself because you had to file a whole new complaint and go do another civil cover sheet and serve everybody again? I also point out that the amended complaint service was accepted by the state. So they didn't say this is void because there's no, we're not going to accept service because there's no validity here. So the question still comes down to, does the rule say that medical malpractice claims are void, or does it say medical malpractice claims and any other non-medical malpractice claims that are in the same complaint get wiped out if there's no affidavit? And again, there's no Nevada case law that specifically addresses that issue. Washoe doesn't, and not.
Yeah, so like, let's say you had a complaint that asserted zero medical malpractice claims. I'm just thinking out.
Sure.
It asserted none, and then you found that you wanted to add a medical malpractice claim. You could amend to add that on motion or as of right, correct? Yes.
And that's the analogy that we looked at. If that medical malpractice claim, or what the judge said was a medical malpractice claim, I won't argue that, is in fact void, then an amendment would have to put it in, and that amendment would, new claim, would require an affidavit. And in fact, in the amended complaint, we added a specific medical malpractice claim with the affidavit.
But that doesn't speak to the reverse situation that Justice Pickering is hypothetically presenting to you. And I believe that our law says when there's a med mal claim under 41A, the complaint is filed without the affidavit, the complaint is bad, period. That's the reverse of the hypothetical. And that to me is very different than you discover, you know, a year and a half into your case that there is a med mal component and you can add it, that the complaint that was originally filed is still good. In if we follow Washoe Med, at the very least, the med mal allegations in this complaint make it or them void, correct?
Absolutely.
And therefore, even if a judge misadvises, which I guess sort of, at least in part, lays out why we all are here, when judges make mistakes, you're suggesting a sua sponte duty on the judge just to do the right thing, i.e. to direct you properly. Is that correct? And you're saying she told you to do this and that's why it's okay.
I think that if the judge misled us and we relied on that, then we should not be punished for following the instructions of the district court judge in an area where clearly there's no settled case law about that. And I think, I hate to argue manifest unfairness and things like that, but that's really what we would have here. For following the court, we would have our case thrown out, where if the judge had given a different instruction or just said, I don't know, we could have just as easily called our amended complaint a new complaint and filed it with the, again, with the civil cover sheet and done that. We didn't because we had no reason to believe that the judge's instructions were going to, or following the judge's instructions, are would cause us to have our entire case dismissed.
Could you have done that with, you would have had two dismissals at that point, right? You'd had your federal case dismissed and your...
Not quite. We had two dismissals, but on different matters.
Okay.
The federal case dismissed the 1983 claims, and the judge said, Judge Mahan said, because the 1983 claims
he's dumping the pendant
jurisdiction, and so we filed the state claims in state
court. So he didn't assert supplemental jurisdiction over the state law claims?
No. Okay. So, again, I don't want to repeat myself if there are any other questions. Again, I think two points are there was no clear case law, and I think maybe this is a case that may create it, but certainly reliance on a judge who is not contradicting case law, was nothing that I could look up or Mr. Marin could look up and say, no, the judge was wrong on this one, because the entire complaint has to be dismissed. Again, just in terms of manifest unfairness, to follow the court's direction and lose the case, and have the case dismissed, so we don't have our day in court, I think would create manifest unfairness.
Thank you. Thank you.
Just briefly, I want to put in a quick plug on Justice Hardesty. You mentioned the two doctors. The other defendant, Chelsea, and I'm going to say her last name wrong, Shalaney, mm-hmm. was actually the administrator of the hospital and was mm-hmm. an employee of the hospital, so she was entitled to that same protection under a medical malpractice as well as the two physicians. And I'd be quite happy to go forward with the complaint as it was written.
But the Southern Nevada Adult Mental Health Services and Mr. Wilden and Mr. Whitley and Mr. Devine aren't covered by 41A.
I would agree. The issue is they weren't named in any of those claims, and that's why if you look through the complaint, they weren't included in any of the claims that made it into that initial complaint. They were definitely talked about in the federal lawsuit, but when it got translated into the state, none of the negligence claims, none of those were raised against Mr. Devine, by the way, has since been dismissed completely from the case, but Mr. Whitley, Mr. Wilden, if you look at the claims that are in that initial complaint, none of the claims were brought against them.
Is your position the same whether the judge says nothing and just dismisses the complaint or says something and says file an amended complaint? Are you across the board on this?
I actually, disagree a little bit with counsel as to an instruction from the court, and that's why I attached the minute order into the record at page 50. I was clearly saying you need to file a new complaint and start over. I was giving all the unwanted advice I could possibly give in the courtroom. Could Judge Adair have given that advice? Certainly. Unfortunately, she didn't. But she definitely didn't instruct them to do that. In fact, they were still arguing, is a professional negligence claim medical malpractice? And she took that under advisement. So she didn't actually reach a decision at that point in time. She did go forward, though, and deny the motion to dismiss, and which I say is counter to Washoe Med. There's any other questions?
Yeah, I do have a question.
Yes.
I believe, did not the original complaint identify Mr. Wilden's capacity?
Yes.
As the head of the Department of Health and Human Services?
It did. They were described, but if you look at the actual causes of action, they're only named against the three doctors, Dr. White, who's also been dismissed, and the administrator of the hospital. So I agree that they are described in that complaint, described as parties. So if this court were going to, look at the amended complaint, for the first time, they're mentioned in the conspiracy charge. But prior to that, in that initial complaint, which according to Washoe is as if it never commenced.
Well, let's take a look at the amended complaint a moment then, which was filed within the statute of limitations.
And you agree with that? Yes.
I agree with that.
I don't mean to derail you, but you concede that it was timely filed for the Med-Mal claims with the attachment. It just needed to be a new action, not an amended complaint.
And it's interesting to look at because that amended complaint still doesn't put Wilden or Whitley anywhere in those claims. Those claims remain the same. The only one that's added is a conspiracy charge. So even with the amendment that went on with the affidavit, they didn't add in Wilden or Whitley into those claims.
And I was about to finish my question about the conspiracy claim. So in the amended complaint, there is a conspiracy claim alleged against two state actors for being involved in a policy involving patient dumping.
Correct.
Why doesn't that independent, non-medical malpractice claim survive? Even under Washoe?
If this court were to conclude that an amendment could be done of a void complaint,
yeah.
to that way, but throughout all the claims, the state would be comfortable with that. It's just not clear from Washoe, because this issue, as Justice Pickering pointed out, has not been raised before, mm-hmm. as to can you amend a voidable complaint with claims that aren't medical malpractice. So the medical malpractice should have been voidable. What they amended the complaint to do was to add non-medical mal. Just to make it very interesting for you all.
Thank you. We appreciate that. Counsel, we appreciate your arguments and your briefing in this. Matter will stand submitted. This court will stand in recess until 1:30 this afternoon.